gentlemen, this is the NBC newsroom in New York. As you heard, our man over in London, the BBC, said that we bring you a special broadcast here in just about 3 minutes, an eyewitness account of one of our reporters who just returned from the beachhead. In the meantime, we have a bulletin here from London. The Vichy radio said tonight, it must be admitted that the Allied beachhead area has been considerably widened and that Allied reinforcements are pouring in. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations will bring you all the news of the invasion as rapidly as it is received. And here is news from another war theater. American bombers carrying out a half dozen weekend raids against Japanese positions in the Central Pacific battered airfield runways and gun positions at Truk, Ponape, Nauru, and in the Eastern Marshalls. The attacks hitting islands in the atolls have just been announced by Admiral Chester W. Nimitz, Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific Fleet. And here is the text. Truk Atoll was bombed during the night of June 3rd and 4th by liberators of the 7th Army Air Force. The airfields at Moyen and Paran Islands were hit. 4 enemy fighters were airborne but did not attack our force. Now I believe we're ready for our broadcast from the BBC in London for the special eyewitness account of a reporter just returned from the beachhead.
Report will follow after 1 minute break, duration 5 minutes, 40 seconds.
As you heard, the man of the BBC, it'll be in 1 minute. In the meantime,
here is Allied war correspondent John McAdam.
I was in at the start of the invasion in the second dicky seat of a glider tug. As we gathered around the leading aircraft on the runway just after midnight, the Americans were going out in close formation. Somebody, he must have been a navigator, said, "Why don't they give us pretty lights like these to steer by?" We saw plenty of pretty lights a little later, but not to steer by. Takeoff was fine until the second. Visibility was good, and the wake of the odd naval craft we spotted shone like silk in the clear moon. The Popeye voice on the intercom croaked, "This is going to be a piece of cake." And so it looked until just short of the enemy coast, we began to run into dense cloud. We went through that and came out facing the coastline. And there were the pretty lights. Hundreds of thousands of them, and all of them tracer. The enemy seems to go in for fancy tracer. Maybe it's to keep his gunners amused. There it was ahead of us like the black pool of illumination. And when it seemed obvious to us that we should call it a day and go back, the pilot put the nose of the aircraft into it as if it were confetti. Every now and then, he called on the intercom, "Okay, glider pilot." The voice always came back, "Okay, skipper." These youngsters took it all in their stride. They chatted away to each other on the intercom as if the flak was directed at some other aircraft with nobody in it. "He's got his sights on us," the skipper would say. And somebody would come back, "He might hit us this time." As for me, I never said a word. The big test came on the run-in. We had to skirt belt after belt of this flaming stuff to bring the glider exactly over the zone it was to land on. It was a trying time for any aircraft, but for a tug and a glider linked by a strand of rope, it looked to me like suicide. But I was glad to be there, if only to see the pitch of mutual trust and regard these RAF air crews and the glider boys of the Army have reached. There was no question of casting off and getting out of it. The skipper said, "Glider pilot, are you all right?" "Okay, great. Well, hold on, son. There's a lot of stuff around here, but we'll get through it."
You've been listening to Allied war correspondent John McAdam. In 1 minute's time, we will broadcast a report from BBC war correspondent Howard Marshall.
And in the meantime, back here at the NBC newsroom in New York, we've just received a late report from Barcelona in Spain. German reports received here today say Allied forces are in full possession of Honfleur, and that is at the mouth of the Seine. Honfleur is just across the river mouth from Le Havre, and the harbor was enlarged shortly before the war. From Honfleur, the Allied forces were said to be fanning out to the east and south toward Point Audemer, 14 miles to the east. I'll repeat what this German report said, that Allied forces are in full possession of Honfleur at the mouth of the Seine River. Now, in just a moment, we'll take you over to London for a report by Howard Marshall. Just one moment, please. This is the NBC newsroom in New York. Just a moment, we'll bring you this report by Howard Marshall.
Stand by for Howard Marshall. BBC war correspondent Howard Marshall saw the Allied forces landing on the French beaches. And he has returned now to tell you his experiences. Howard Marshall.
I've just come back from the beaches, and as I've been in the sea twice, I'm sitting in my set-through clothes with no notes at all. All my notes are sudden and at the bottom of the sea. So, as it's literally a matter of minutes since I stepped off a craft, I'm just going to try to tell you very briefly the story of what our boys had to do on the beaches today as I saw it myself. I was in a barge which was due to pick up the brigadier of an assault group, and we were going in with the first assault wave. So we circled round with the various types of vessels opening fire on the beach, which we could see quite plainly in the dim morning light. Opening fire on the beach in their own manners and at the appointed time. First of all, the cruisers started with a rather loudly bang. And soon the air grew heavy with the smell of cordite and loud with the sound of explosions. And looking along the beach, we could see the explosions of our artillery creating a great cloud and fog of smoke. Well, we, in my particular craft, picked up our brigadier, not easily, because, as I say, the sea was very rough, and we headed straight for our appointed portion of the beach. We could see, as we went in, that that particular portion of the beach wasn't altogether healthy, and as we drove towards it, with our planes overhead giving us the sort of cover we'd been hoping for and which we'd been expecting. As we drove in, we could see shell bursts in the water along the beach and just behind the beach. And we could see craft in a certain amount of difficulty because the wind was driving the sea in with long rollers. And the enemy had prepared anti-invasion, anti-barge obstacles sticking out from the water. Formidable prongs, many of them tipped with mines, so that as your landing barge swung and swayed in the rollers, and they're not particularly manageable craft, it would come into contact with one of these mines and be sunk. So that was the prospect which faced us on this very lowering and difficult morning as we drove into the beach. I tell you this, as I say, because it was the experience of so many other men at just this same time. We drove into the beach, swinging rather broadside on in the wind and the waves, seeing the jets of smoke from bursting shells near us in the water and slightly further away on the beach itself. And suddenly, as we tried to get between two of these tripod defense systems of the Germans, our craft swung, we touched a mine. There was a very loud explosion, a sudden ring, a shudder, the whole craft, and water began pouring in. Well, we were somewhere out from the beach at that point. The ramp was lowered at once, and out of the barge drove the Bren gun carrier into about 5 feet of water, with the barge settling heavily.
As usual, by Mr. Thomas, who is unfortunately detained, it will be read by myself. Hello, WLW. If you would like the name of the speaker tonight, I will spell out the name for you in 10 seconds. This is TAP Anchor with a service notice for WLW. Hello, WLW. I'm going to spell out for you now the name.
This is the NBC newsroom in New York, ladies and gentlemen. You've just heard a report, an eyewitness account by Howard Marshall of the BBC, who has just returned from a beachhead with our armed forces there. It might be of interest to you to know exactly why the talk by Mr. Marshall had so many blank spaces. It sounded at times as though he'd been cut off. That's exactly what happened. Those blank spaces in Mr. Marshall's talk were caused by the censors. I have here a bulletin. OWI reports that the head of the German military authorities in France has issued strict orders to the people in certain departments of France, forbidding them to evacuate without permission under threat of being shot, or to go out of doors even in the daytime in the zone of actual military operations. The German radio is quoted. Throughout the day and night, the broadcast said, all doors must be kept closed, though not bolted, and the people in localities which may be included in the zone of operations must keep indoors, or if necessary, in their cellars. Following is the text of the instructions as broadcast and reported by the Federal Communications Commission. From dusk to dawn, the population is forbidden to circulate in the streets. Until further notice, it is forbidden to circulate in vehicles and on bicycles, to form gatherings of more than 3 persons in the streets, and to gather either inside or outside of closed premises, except in homes and working premises. Local military authorities may grant exceptions regarding paragraphs 1 and 2. And to follow on with a quote, places of entertainment, public places, and restaurants must be closed. The sale of alcohol is forbidden until further notice. Throughout the day and night, doors and doorways of all buildings must not be locked or bolted. Windows must be closed from sunset to sunrise. No one must stand by doors or windows without the order of the military authorities. No evacuation must take place. And here is another bulletin, just handed us here. London, the Vichy radio said tonight, it must be admitted that the Allied beachhead area has been considerably widened. Further, Radio Vichy says, it must be admitted that Allied reinforcements are pouring in on the beachheads. Now, just a few seconds that remain, we'd like to call your attention to a broadcast which follows in just about 30 seconds. The NBC International Division. This is the National Broadcasting Company.